We may not be able to get in on the sporting action like we used to, but we can get in on some exclusive offers from Renault. To celebrate their third year as official car partner of the GAA, Renault is offering a range of special offers exclusive to all GAA club members. So now you can take home the win right to your door. Check out renault.ie/GAA to find out more.
With Renault, official car partner of the GAA, taking the passion of a nation to a whole new gear.
A grain of rice is going to tip the scale. Just remember that, lad.
There's a small bit of a needle there.
Come on, Mayo, you've got to get Andy Moran into the game.
Listen back to England.
Keith, where were you when the final whistle went?
Standing up in the Cusack stand, I suppose, going a bit mad like everyone else around us. A bit jealous, but delighted for the boys, in fairness. But yeah, I didn't really hang around too long to listen to the Green and Red of Mayo now or anything like that. I kind of got out of there as quick as I could. But I was just delighted for everyone, especially Robbie there, who kicked that the point. I suppose to bring it to extra time. So the place was going a bit bananas, so it was time to get out of that stage.
What's the feelings when what's happening in the first half is happening? What's your feelings?
The first half was just so frustrating, to be honest. You're looking at it and the boys, like, you don't want to be criticizing them because they know them so well and everything, but they were just, I suppose, look, they seemed to be playing a bit of a zonal defense on them. You know, they were staying 5 or 10 or 15 meters off them at times, and they were just playing into Dublin's hands, and they just let Dublin hold on to the ball and do what Dublin do. And it was just frustrating. And I met one of the boys, a friend of mine, at halftime, and, you know, it was 10-4 at halftime. He just says it felt like a 6-point hammering, you know, like we just could not hold on to the ball. We'd win it back, we'd try and make an attack, and we just turn it over straight away. So it was just very, very frustrating at halftime.
Did you see a way back for them?
No, to be quite honest, I couldn't. I thought they'd have to come out and maybe go a bit more man to man, but you couldn't really just see where they were going to close a 6-point gap. Like I said, because of Dublin's track record of just being able to dominate games and close games out and just, I suppose, drain the life out of teams with the possession game that they have, you just couldn't see them being able to kind of get 6 points of a gap closed off. But yeah, thank God we were all wrong.
Were you taking any solace from the fact that, you know, they turned the Galway game around, or were you just thinking, look, at Dublin are a completely different animal?
Yeah, that never really came into my head, to be honest, just because I think it was because of Dublin. You know, when it's any other team, you think you have a chance, but with Dublin, you just couldn't see how you'd get enough ball to dominate the game to turn around a 6-point deficit. So, like, the more I think back on it, I was thinking about there this morning, last night, like, when you look at the kind of final as well, and Mayo, the first half, they were the exact same. They were standing off Galway. They were giving them 5 or 10 yards. I don't know, was it a tactical master plan by James Horan to start slow and then just come out all guns blazing for the second half? Because that's exactly what they did in the last two games. But I wouldn't think it is. I think it's just a coincidence. But yeah, like, I mean, the Galway game just never came into my head just because Dublin are just a completely different team.
Mike, when you watched that first half, what was the feelings?
Sure, it was game over. It was over. Like, I mean, you're lucky that you weren't talking somewhere at halftime predicting the outcome of the game, because everybody was stone wrong. Obviously, you're just looking at that running out to being a 10-point win for Dublin or 10 plus. And you know, again, it's probably understandable in terms of you're missing Killian O'Connor, one of the best and high scorers in football history. You're missing Oisín Mullen, your most dynamic attacker and or defender, but also attacker, obviously. So you could see how it was going to just play out for Mayo, and it was inevitable, really. I mean, like Keith said there, you couldn't see any way that Dublin were not going to win the game. They just looked at their methodical best. They were strangling the game. They'd got their lead. And probably that score by Conor Loftus right before halftime, while it only made it a 6-point game, it actually made it it was a crucial score. It gave them that small little bit of a nudge of confidence maybe going into halftime. But you still, you know, even James McCarthy to start the second half had that goal chance right off the throw-in. And you're saying, this is done. This is all over. And somehow Mayo did what they always seem to do.
What was that somehow? How did they manage to turn it around?
You see, I think you can be looking at different things there tactically, and James Horn is all this. For me, it was just about energy and enthusiasm, and the difference in pace, the difference in their intensity around the tackle. Now Dublin also got really uncharacteristically sloppy, and I think as a result of the pressure they were coming under, because of that energy and that you know, just complete youthful exuberance that Mayo were showing, like guys like Ryan O'Donoghue and Tommy Conroy, you're looking at those two guys and you're saying, like, are they going to make up enough scores, you know, to make up for the likes of Killian O'Connor being missing? You're saying they're not at that level. And suddenly Ryan O'Donoghue is lamping James McCarthy with a shoulder, and he goes back and again he dispossesses him, and later he's down the field and he's kicking a score, and all these fellas just came, like, that wasn't happening in the first half. And it was just that change of energy, those small plays, that play that I think was like the key in the game, that Dermot O'Connor, where he saved that 45 going out over the end line, a massive effort, ran about 35 metres across the goals to save the ball, to get to Kevin McLaughlin, he puts over the... Those plays weren't happening in the first half. And sometimes it's very hard to, like, pinpoint something and say, this is a tactical adjustment that James Horn made. Just a wave of energy came over that team for whatever reason, and they capitalised on it, and had the skill and the talent, obviously, to take advantage of it, and Dublin waned.
Keith, were you ever conscious of that? Because I know, Mike, I think we might have talked about this in the past, that I almost think Mayo are best when they're in that situation, because they don't have to think too much about it. There's no, like, there is really no, you know, nothing well, there's things tactically you can do, there's matchups you can change and all that sort of thing, but it's almost like they don't have to think too much about it and they just go, and I don't want to use the word gung-ho, but that's sort of the way it is.
Yeah, like, I think I was chatting to someone there yesterday about it, like, and they're going, you know, what happens now in the final, whether it's Tyrone or Kerry and tactics, and I said they could be better off throwing tactics out the window and just turn into 70 minutes of chaos, like, because that seems to be when they perform their best. But I know, even thinking back other years, like when we were in similar positions, like, you probably think of the last 10 minutes of the 15 semi-final against Dublin, you know, the second half against Kerry in 14, when it was just, you've no other option but just to go gung-ho or balls out, whatever you want to describe it, and go after the game and just chase everything down. And I think as well, again, it might sound very simplistic, but when there's a bit of a crowd there, an atmosphere, and they get behind you, you get a bit of energy from it. Like, and it's,
yeah, there was 124,000 people.
Yeah, yeah. You wouldn't think it's so, at it, like, but,
there's 100,000 of them was hiding. Yeah. But the atmosphere was, it was truly unbelievable, wasn't it?
Yeah, and like for a small crowd, and I'd say the same after the Connacht final, with good atmosphere. Like when everyone's spread out, it just makes things sound a bit louder, do you know? Whereas if you're at a league game, there's 20,000 there and they're all down the Hogan stand, it feels like there's an echo. But I just think that kind of got behind Mayo. But at the same time, I look back on it, and like with 62 minutes gone, we're still 5 points down. Do you know? Now, I know there was a big delay for the old McLaughlin incident, like, but we'd only call back a point in that whole game, and how we went from that final 10 minutes to claw back a 5-point deficit, and even Dublin clicked on another score. So it was just, yeah, it was just a kind of bit of a mental second half. But I think the one thing I kind of took from looking at it from kind of up high was that when Mayo went man to man, it wasn't giving Dublin that easy out ball that they like. You know, in the first half, Mayo were playing that sweeper, and Dublin will just go back and over across the pitch. They'll have that extra man. They won't take a player. They'll drag you around the pitch, and they'll just frustrate you. Where in the second half, they didn't have that handy 90% pass to a fellow in 10 yards of space. And because of it, then I think they kind of got a bit sloppy and carried the ball into a tackle a few times. And on a wet day, we got a few turnovers. So I think they just took Dublin out of their comfort zone, not by any tactical masterclass, but just bringing loads of energy and actually getting a few tackles in, which they weren't doing the first half.
And Mike, see, you know, when we talk about Dublin, is that just a case of Dublin just don't have the same level of footballers that they once did? Because they normally get themselves out of these messes somewhere or another. Now, not by the skin of their teeth a lot of the time. Are we just talking purely about quality here?
I think that's a big part of it, definitely. Yeah. I mean, if you go all the way back, Oisin, to the COVID training breach that Dublin were caught, and it was in the front page of the papers. And right there, and I know it's easy to look back now in hindsight, but right there you're saying, like, that was staggering to me at the time, that Dublin would allow their standards to drop to such an extent that the best team in the country for the past 6 years is trying to cheat people and cut corners and go training when you're not supposed to. That was a shocking indictment for me for the kind of champion that they've been and I've held themselves to the kind of standards that they did. And then you look at their league performances, you look at their performances in the Leinster Championship, you look at the Cluxton situation, you look at, you know, Eric Lowndes, you look at Kevin McManaman in the Olympics, you look at Philly McMahon and different bits and pieces. And there's no question that they haven't had the same high standards that they have had for the last number of years. And they have not had the same quality of players coming off the bench or starting the games that they've had for the last couple of years. And again, that's not to say that these fellas won't go on to be very, very good. But right now, like, how many times has Kevin McMenamin come on for Dublin and rescue a game that was gone from them? You know, how many times did, you know, Paul Mannion burn fellas and kick scores? How many times did Jack McCaffrey go by fellas and create goal chances for other players? And like, the same level of quality is not there right now for Dublin. And again, I'm not trying to criticise the guys that are there. It's just the people that were there previously were of an exceptionally high quality. Like, you look at the impact from the Dublin bench yesterday. They had 1 point. The Mayo bench outscored them. And I know it's not just about scoring, but that was always something that those guys, the finishers, used to come on, the Cormac Costellos and McMenamin and all the rest of these guys. And they used to rack up 2-4, 2-5, and they'd put the game to bed. Whereas you're not seeing that now, and there's been an understandable slippage of standards, and then also that slippage of quality, which was always going to happen because of the level that other fellas were at.
As you say, like, sometimes it is easy in hindsight, but I think we've all mentioned at different stages. Is that a management issue? Like, are we talking, like, the day Desi Farrell told us he wasn't sure what was happening with Stephen Cluxton, was that the day that everybody else sort of stood up and said, whoa, everything's not what it should be here?
It's a part of it. Like, it's definitely a part of it because, like, Stephen Cluxton has been their standard bearer for so many years. And while Evan Comerford, I thought he actually played pretty well yesterday. He had one crucial turnover of a kick out that cost a point. But in general, I thought he performed pretty well. But it's not even his on-field performance. It's the standards that he sets in training and what he demands of other people in the dressing room and before games. And I think that was inevitable. Anytime you lose leaders of the quality that Dublin have lost, lads, it's impossible to just replicate that with the next guy. And you could say the same with Killian O'Connor, obviously, with Mayo and how they did it. But this has been a team that's been at the very, very pinnacle for the last, you know, bones of a decade, six, seven All-Irelands in a row. But Desi was always going to have a tough job, like, because this was, like, he always was going to be the one that had to start to regenerate the team and to see if the Sean Buglers and if the Cullen Baskells were going to be as good as the guys that they were replacing. And right now, like, the quality is not the same. And Mayo capitalised on it. And while the quality looked really good in the first half, when they were really put to the pin of their collar in the second half with the energy and the effort of Mayo, they just weren't able to get themselves out of that hole, which they have done for so many times in the past.
If the standards had to remain the same, would Dublin have won the All-Ireland? As in, like, the non-fussy way that Jim Gavin went about things, how he kept the change room on the wraps. I mean, it just felt as if it was unraveling. And again, this is not just after the event. I think everybody's talked about it over the last number of weeks. I just felt that they would have just eked out one more. I thought there was one more in them, and then, you know, we would have maybe seen a change in the guard.
Yeah, it's hard to know. I just think, like Desi will probably take a lot of flack, obviously, just because he's the guy now that's in charge and they've lost the run. But if you just go through the type of quality of player that they've lost in the last number of years, like with your Bernard Brogans, Alan Brogans, you know, like it, Paul Mannion, Jack McCaffrey, like Cluxton, it's an incredible loss of talent and leadership that they've suffered. So, and when you say standards, the standards aren't just set by the manager. The standards are set by the senior players. I mean, Roy Keane was speaking there at something recently, and I remember how he was speaking about the senior players were the guys that set the standards. And you all know that from the dressing room boys. And like, when you lose those fellas, like, suddenly maybe fellas are stopping a foot short of where they normally would get to if those other fellas were there and they were doing it. And it's just, I just think it's inevitable. Like, it, this was never, ever going to go on forever with the way that Dublin had been so brilliant in those moments. And it's just, I look, it's good. It's good in one sense. I know Dublin people won't like to hear it, but for football and for what that'll do for the championship moving forward into the next couple of years, they've certainly now, not that they're not going to win more All-Irelands, but they're certainly now, you know, a more level proposition than they have been for a long number of years.
Yeah, I think, like, if you look at it, again, like Mike there, I think they will come back and they could be contending or winning All-Irelands again in a couple of years. But even if you go back to when Kilkenny broke up after being dominant in the hurling for so long, when you lose the likes of a Shefflin or Tommy Walsh and all these guys together, when you lose once-in-a-generation players, you're not going to replace them with the same quality. Like, it's nearly impossible. So, as you know, as Mike mentioned there, some of the players they've mentioned, when five or six of them lads go from a dressing room, it's a completely different place. So, yeah, again, like, you're not going to rule them out coming back winning another All-Ireland, but like I said, it's just, you can't replace once-in-a-generation players overnight.
When we talk about the moments from from the game on Saturday, Mayo had a serious momentum build up. The water break happened. Built a bit of momentum up again. The old McLaughlin incident happened. As you say, 5 points down, 62 minutes on the clock, in a low-scoring game. How did they claw that? How did they claw that back?
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question, I suppose. You know, Mike mentioned there the Dermot O'Connor play. And I suppose it's probably something that you get a bit of a life out of as a player. Like, I mean, when you see him, and Dermot's been doing this all the time. Like, I mean, he ran 30 yards there to keep a ball in play that he shouldn't have. I think we mentioned Ryan O'Donoghue getting in a few tackles and all that. So there's small bits and plays you can kind of mention. But again, I think for me, Lee Keegan was just phenomenal. Like, I mean, I haven't seen him bursting out from defense like that so often for a long time. You know, I think he's been back cornerback the last 2 years. He's been making a few bursts every half, but he just looked like a man yesterday who was back to his usual self. And every time Mayo turned over the ball, he was gone. Like, I mean, he kicked a score one stage to bring it back. Well, sorry, to, was it our first or second score after halftime? You know, he was turning ball over. So I think it was maybe some of the turnovers back in defence that were just as probably they got more energy from, you know, because like I said, it was just so un-Dublin like, and when the ball over, the crowd gets going and the player just get energy from that. So, yeah, look, there's a load of different small things you could pinpoint, but I think that was one. But even like the Merchant going off was a huge loss for Dublin, it felt like. I mean, they had no one really to carry ball out of defence like him. You know, when he went, took off, the boys couldn't live with him. You know, and he went down with cramp, I think, out in the 45th minute, and then he went off about 15 or 20 minutes later. So losing the likes of him coming out of defence again was a huge loss for Dublin.
I was just thinking, actually, about Lee Keegan last night when I heard it's 2 weeks to the Kerry-Tyrone game and 2 weeks to the final. I'm thinking Lee Keegan is going to need every one of those every one of those weeks, because he looked as if he was in a lot of bother coming off the pitch. But, like, you know, he just ran himself to a standstill. Who was Mayo's big players on Saturday?
Oh, Jesus, take your pick. Like, Keegan was obviously just awesome, you know, like, and it was like the Mayo backs. I thought if you look at the impact that the likes of Conor Callan had and Niall Scully and all these guys, Kilkenny, you know, like Dublin forwards, or their whole team contributed 4 points for over 60 minutes of the game. Like, that's an incredible performance. Like, Matty Ruan got no mention from all your superstars in the Sunday game last night, O'Sheen. You could have given him some shout out. Like, Brian
Fenton, I thought I did mention him. McStay was supposed to mention him, I think.
But like, like himself and Loftus had a fantastic game in the middle of the field. Brian Fenton, like, I know he caught a couple of, you know, maybe two or three big kickouts, but he had nowhere near the kind of impact that he's normally having in games. And then you look at the Tommy Conroy for me, like, I thought Tommy Conroy was underwater for 45 minutes of the game. I thought he looked like a fellow who was too big from right now, and then he just thunders into the game. And for a guy who's, what age is Tommy Conroy? 21, 22. I thought he was like a huge leader in the last quarter and extra time. Same with Ryan O'Donoghue. You know, I just thought they had so many guys, like fellas came off the bench and contributed. Like, you know, Darren Cohen does what he does, sits in the pocket, lovely little right-legged hook kick over the bar, crucial score. Like they just, and funny, you know, you asked Keith there about what was it that turned the whole thing. I think the performance of the referee actually contributed to Mayo's performance. Like things were so chaotic, they felt so aggrieved at several of the incidents, and rightly so. Like James Horan got so hot. I think fellas fed off that kind of energy and that kind of vibe as well, and it drove him on. And it was just the whole thing lended itself to a real, like that classic chaotic Mayo performance, where they came out on the right side because of everything was going against them and said they shouldn't, but yet they found a way to do it.
How bad was Conor Lane?
Yeah, he won't want to watch that. He won't want to watch that game again, you know. And like, it's easy. Like when I saw that first, the John Small hit, take that one. Like in real time on TV, now I was only watching on TV, I was thinking, Jesus Christ, that's a serious hit. John Small is there to do that kind of stuff. He's their physical, you know, the aggressive kind of guy that he's not there for his silken football skills. He's there to be physical and to lay down the law. And he saw an opportunity to say, I'm going to buckle this fella as hard as I possibly can legally. And he missed, you know, he got it wrong. He mistimed it. And, you know, it's a red card. There's no question about it. And but I didn't mind Conor Lane getting that wrong because of the, fair enough, he was very, very close to it. And this, the pace at which it all happened. But what really, really, and if you were at everybody, was the fact that he did not immediately stop the game to check on the injured player, McLaughlin, on the ground. Like, it was clear to everybody that was a serious, serious hit, and it needed to be checked to see was he okay. And that stuff, like, all the rest of them, like, you know, Paddy Small at a clothesline should have got a red card. Like, there was loads of other ones. James McCarthy with a nice one. There was plenty of those kind of things that he got wrong, that he didn't get the kind of help that he should have got from his linesmen and umpires and everybody else. But it was that one that really aggravated everybody, that stopped the game. It doesn't matter what happens. If Pascal had scored that goal, lads, there would have been absolute craziness in the stadium if that had happened.
I think that's the big thing. Like, I mean, I was over in the Cusick stand. Like, I was a good bit away from it, and it looked like a fair hit to me as well. But I knew as soon as he got hit that he looked like he was out for the count before he hit the ground. And that's the most important thing, is like, you could, you know, he's in bother, just stop the game. Like, whether the goal had gone in or not, secondary, when you see a lad with a broken jaw and missing how many teeth, you know. So, but just to go back to your previous question, though, Shane, like, I thought Enda Hessian, when he came on, was very good for another young lad, 20-21.
Very direct, like, yeah.
The amount of ball he carried out of that defence in the second half in injury time, like, for a guy that young to do that in a big game, I just thought it just showed, I suppose, again, that fearless that sometimes these young bucks have.
Yeah, and when you were sitting in the stand, Keith, because I felt, personally speaking, sitting in the ground, I felt this. Did you think that Conor Lane almost immediately knew what had happened and tried to redress the balance? as in he basically played with Mayo for the next 20 odd minutes.
It didn't feel like that from where I was sitting now, but I couldn't move away from it. But like, again, it's funny, like, I mean, Mike mentioned there the kind of couple of big calls that you can see from anywhere in the stadium that I think he got wrong, but at the same time, and I could get shot for saying this, like, apart from the big ones that he got wrong, I didn't think he was awful bad for some of the other stuff, like, you know. But again, I've only watched it back once, and I watched it back as a supporter rather than kind of trying to analyze it in much detail. So, yeah, look, he got some of the big calls wrong. Like, people are saying the one with who was a Davy Byrne and Kevin McLaughlin was a black card. Yeah, probably was, but like, there was two other Dublin defenders around him at the time as well. You know, I know it was cynical and all that, but like, yeah, look, it wasn't his best day out,
to put it that way. It was a manic game, and there's loads of excuses for him, and he didn't get a big pile of help from his mates on the sideline.
That's a bugbear of mine for a long time, is that, you know, linesmen and umpires, like, you have five other people around the pitch. Like, how did the referee not get more help in every game, not just the last day? Like, I mean, Jesus. like what are they there for? Like, I think there's a rule that, you know, the linesman can't call a foul, but I mean, what's he there to be looking at? So is he just there to drop his leg out over the line? Like, I mean, they need more help.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think Mike, we've talked about this before. I'm not going to spend too much time in this, but like I think it really genuinely is time for in the NFL they have referee teams that travel together, you know, go from one game to the other, are constantly in contact, know what way each other works, and I think it's time for that. I think it's time for, rather than every time Conor Lane goes out, to have two different linesmen. You know, obviously he has his own umpires, but I just think it's time for, you know, teams like that, because it is so important now. Because what I'll hear over the next couple of days is, you know, whenever I would be critical of Conor Lane, is that, you know, he's a human being, he's a referee, it's a hard job. I tell you what, playing at that level and managing that level is no fucking picnic either. So, no. I mean, do you know what I mean? So these decisions are so crucial. So crucial. But lads, moving on from that, I have never seen Dublin, never in the 10 years, I've never seen them kick a sideline ball in on top of the square. Was that the first time where you just went, nah, yeah, this is just not right?
But even the last, it was a few 5 or 6 minutes, like they're just literally putting ball into the full forward line, kicking it in, which you haven't seen Dublin do in about, I'd say, since Jim Gavin took over. They'd always just try and work the score, even if it took them 5 minutes, you know. So again, does that come back to what I mentioned earlier on about the standards being gone, training not being the same, the leaders not in the pitch? Like, you know, we can kind of question it all we want because we don't know what's going on in the background. But yeah, like when I saw stuff like that happen, I was like, what's going on here now? You know, it's just not Dublin, like.
Yeah, and it wasn't even that sideline one was one that you were looking at. That was like you'd see that in a junior football game at the weekend. Like that's kind of like, let's lump it into the biggest fella in the parish there at full forward and see if we can get a flick on and get a goal. That's the most un-Dublin like thing we've seen for 10 years. But there was more though. If you look back through that second half, like there was guys playing. Like I think Brian Fenton played a free kick about 25 yards, a punt kick towards. I think it might have been Kilkenny with Lee Keegan like literally on top of him, you know, a kind of a ball up in the air that he was always going to break. And they just never make those kind of decisions. Like they always make the guy does the right thing with the ball at the right moment. Fellas make a good run into space and it's an easy ball, 70-30 ball. Whereas they just started playing 50-50 stuff yesterday, which I suppose feeds into that whole level of a bit of panic that they were feeling. But it was really un-Dublin like. But you know, I still think you gotta give the lion's share of the credit to Mayo and to James Horn and like James Horn started this, and Keith's probably better to tell about it. Is like he brought in all these young fellas like a couple of years ago and started developing nearly a development squad with these fellas and developed them physically, and you're now seeing the fruits of that and the trust in it. Like to take off Aidan O'Shea, like with everything that Aidan O'Shea has done for Mayo down through the years, the kind of leadership that he's shown and the football and the tackling and the aggression, to take him off so early and to go and show trust in the guys that you've been developing for the last number of years, and then for them to repay that trust with the kind of performance that they delivered, like that's a serious, serious sign of the future of Mayo football, you would think as well, you know?
Mike, if you were in James Horan's shoes at the minute, are you happy that there's a month, or is a month a wee bit too much?
Nah, I'd be delighted. I'd be delighted with it. I think they're on such a high now. They're buzzing so much after doing what they've done, that they'll recover and you know, they'll do nothing for the next week or 10 days. They'll sit back and relax and watch Kerry and Tyrone take lumps out of each other. And then they'll start to, you know, gear themselves up into that space as well. But I don't think if it was 6 weeks, 12 weeks, I don't think they'd give a flying fiddlers after what they just did yesterday, because they have nothing. But, you know, they can look at their first half and say, lads, we didn't play in the first half. We had 4 points or 4 points in the game in the first half against Dublin in nearly 40 minutes of football. And we are the ones that have come back and beaten this Dublin, this unbeatable team. That we're the ones that have done that. If we can improve our performance in the first half, let's look at the stuff that we can do better. And let's really focus on that for the next 2 weeks. And then let's have a look at Kerry or Tyrone and let's really attack that game with the same kind of energy that we did in the second half. I think they're in a fabulous position.
Oshin Mullen will obviously be be back, or at least be very close to being back. Killian O'Connor, I don't think has any chance, really, Keith. Is it just about getting the bodies right? I mean, give us a snapshot of what it's like leading up to an All-Ireland final in Mayo. Do you what bunker do you go into for the next month?
You can't find any around this place. I think Mike was right there. Like, 4 weeks is probably loads. I mean, he gave Oisin an extra couple of weeks to recover. Like, Killian's not going to be back. He's not going to be back for next year, never mind this All-Ireland final. So, part of next year anyways, you know, it is a long-term injury, in fairness. So, yeah, you give them plenty of time to recover this week. I know, look, they'll probably be back on the pitch probably Wednesday just doing some light stuff. I think it's going to be a strange one for them. Like, cause, I mean, if it's Kerry, who we all think it's going to be in the final, like, it's going to be a completely different kettle of fish to what they've faced against Dublin or Galway or anyone else. Like, I mean, like, Kerry this year have been so... they've looked very good, in fairness to them. Like, I mean... For all this, what the attacking players they have, even you look at the kind of the half back line, the way they're attacking now for Kerry as well as the defence. So it's going to be a completely different proposition for them. But I think James will be kind of looking at that and looking maybe what Cork did to them in the first 20 minutes and kind of focusing on that and focusing on if they can get their game right again, they'll cause Kerry problems. So again, I'm assuming it's going to be Kerry. It's why you'd never rule out Tyrone. You just can't really see them having enough to beat Kerry. So yeah, it's going to be an interesting.
So you're ruling them out.
Huh?
You're ruling them out there, so Keith.
I don't think it's going to be as straightforward as people think. Tyrone probably used the whole COVID thing as well to kind of for some psychological advantage, and it's probably nobody else will be better than some of the Ulster teams for using that. But I don't think it's going to be as straightforward as people think, but I can't see Tyrone having enough to beat Kerry, you know. So I suppose the answer
Sorry, Keith. Mike, is it fair to say that having spent a little bit of time in Colin Cooper's company last number of weeks, is it fair to say that Kerry people are still not 100% convinced?
Sure, you're not gonna. It's a bit like Dublin. Like everybody was saying, Dublin had fallen off their ledge. It's not until you see it done that you're going to be 100% convinced. And it's the same with Kerry. Yeah, like Kerry have developed a serious team now and a serious squad, loads of talent defensively. Still question marks, obviously. But until until they get over the line and get it done, then obviously that those question marks will remain. But I still think they're in a really good spot. I know this whole drama at the moment now with, you know, will the game get played against Tyrone? Would it not get played? I'm glad they came out last night and put it to bed and said, yeah, this semi-final against Tyrone will take place on the 28th or whatever it is, and the final will go back another week to the 11th if whoever's in there. Like, it's a terrible situation for Tyrone, obviously, but it was also a terrible situation for Kerry. Notwithstanding, the most important thing here, lads, is I think was it Fergal Lawn or Brian Doerr? Somebody said that one of the players was actually hospitalised with it and was really struggling with it. So, like, while we're all consumed with football and the joy of the weekend and what happened yesterday, that's the most important thing, that these fellas are okay, obviously, and that we're not, you know, fixtures aren't forcing them to try and come back from something that's really, you know, has a negative health impact on their lives too quickly. And the game will get played, no doubt, but, you know, we want to make sure that everybody's okay, first of all, I suppose.
What do you make of the statements of the weekend? The Johnny Cochran-esque statements from both Tyrone and Kerry.
What are you
making them?
I think like Tyrone played it beautifully. Like Tyrone did what they had to do to get the result that they wanted, and I think in doing so, like they backed Kerry into a corner. Really, like Kerry couldn't. What could Kerry say? You know, no, we're not gonna put the game back. We wanna walk over to the final. Like, of course they're not gonna say that. And Kerry need a game. Like, if Kerry went in to play Mayo without having a game since they played Cork 5 or 6 weeks ago, they'd be miles off that level. So I think Kerry were forced into the position that they were in, and they did the right thing and said, listen, we're willing to wait until it's safe to play the game. And then I think eventually the GAA came out, like, why again it took them as long as it did? Why they didn't just say, you know, people are saying, oh, financially it makes no sense or makes more sense. They were always going to give them the 2 weeks. Well, why didn't they just give them the 2 weeks if it was financially motivated? Why didn't they just do that first day and you'd get more people in the ground? you know. But I think, look, we're after getting to the right conclusion in a very circumvented way. And it'll be great that, you know, we have another 2 weeks now to look forward to that semi-final. We can relax and enjoy, you know, what we just saw yesterday. And then looking forward to a great final, whoever's going to be in it from this side.
So it's fair to say everybody more or less come out pretty happy.
Yeah, I'm sure Kerry were a bit pissed off with the whole thing, you know, the way it's after getting played out. Nobody wants to have, you know, the way the teams are trained now, lads, everything is really, yeah, you know, analysed.
How long does that leave between the Cork game and the playing in Northern Ireland semi-final?
It'll be five or six weeks, man. I'd have to check the date there. Five or six weeks. It's five weeks.
It's a long time. It's almost like the old days. I remember Kerry going into a quarterfinal against Down in 2010. I think they had 5 weeks layoff and just were, honestly, from the 60th minute on, looked as if they were going to rack the place, but it just wasn't there, and that was just as a result of the layoff. So the layoff is not ideal. Keith, when you talk about the build-up to an All-Ireland final, will this build-up be slightly different? Will Mayo fans be more tempered than they have been in the past, or will it just be business as usual?
I think it'll just be, well, I suppose you'd hope with the four-week break, you might have this week have just been the usual carnage, talking about the massive comeback and everyone being on a high again, and then it might begin to taper a small bit. But I think the fact that you're going to have a reduced attendance, the whole ticket thing is going to be mentally again, like, so I don't think it's going to be any way different to previous ones, to be honest. I think sometimes, and I've said this before, the Mayo supporters are absolutely mental, but in the best possible way. But I just think the next 3 weeks are going to be the exact same. Sometimes you'd wonder when you listen to some of the talk that goes on, you'd wonder like what planet they're on. But like, obviously after beating the sixth in a row champions now, like, they're going to be on a high thinking they have a great chance. I think in fairness to James and the boys, they will try and keep it as grounded as possible. There won't be as many distractions as in banquets and fucking banquet tickets and all that type of stuff again, I'd imagine. So it shouldn't be as bad, but I think the general public will be, it'd be hard to get away from it.
And like, just...
I'm going up to Mayo at the weekend for 3 or 4 days with the family or whatever. And like, we were up there... What year was it? No, whatever year, one of the years there that Mayo were in the final, and it's the only county where you pass every single house for about an hour and a half driving through the county, and there's a flag, there's a colour, there's a teddy bear, it's the only other county that I've seen that resembles Kerry, like, with that level of craziness and in relation to football, and there's no tapering this stuff. Like, they're going to be, and they, like, this week should be mayhem in Mayo. Like, they should be excited, because this is the job that James Horn has done to regenerate that team. Like, without any big noise about it or anything, lads. Like, with the guys that are in there now that you're saying, like, I heard somebody on the radio there this morning saying, will Aidan O'Shea start the game? Can you imagine going into the All-Ireland final saying, will Aidan O'Shea start the game? That that's going to be a debate now, whether your best player of the last 10 years, possibly, is going to start the game. And that's where they're at. Like, they have such confidence now with these young guys, and rightly so. And, like, Rob Henley, like, I was so happy for Rob Henley. I hate when I, like, fellas like that who put in as much time and effort into it as they can, and they never seem to get the reward that effort deserves. And, like, Jesus Christ, like, you couldn't but be happy for these fellas. And that's the county. That's the way the county should be. You know, Keith Ricken, the under-20 manager with Cork there, somebody asked him after one of the games he beat Kerry or something, how are you going to bring him down? How are you going to get him back down on the ground now after being up so high winning the game? And he said, so why do I want to bring him back down on the ground for? This is what we're all our lives for. Keep him up in the sky, keep him flying. And listen, I understand you can't get carried away, but this is what they've done has been monumental. Like, and it shouldn't be something that we're trying to, you know, put into the suitcase straight away. I'm sure James Horn will give him a little bit of time to enjoy it, and then let's focus on the next one, you know.
But I think, like, from a Mayo point of view, is like, we've had so many of these big semi-final wins, you know, that is, and in fairness, there's a big change in the panel now, but a lot of the lads would have been there for these big semi-final wins before. So I think there does have to be a stage where you know, you kind of realize the big semi-final wins won't be much good in 20 years and then you're looking back. So look, obviously they will enjoy it, but I think at the same time, there's, I think they're smart enough to know there's a bigger picture there as well.
Yeah, but the cup, the supporters aren't playing a game. Like, the supporters should be bonkers for the next 4 weeks and do as much as you can. Leave the players alone, obviously. But like, sure, if the supporters aren't going to enjoy the next 4 weeks, what are we doing it for?
Exactly.
Yeah, I think sometimes we get very afraid of some of the emotions that's involved. And there was a huge amount of emotion involved on Sunday. And,
yeah.
You know, I always talk about emotion in sport and. Like, a lot of what Mayo did, I felt at the weekend was just pure will.
Yeah.
I used to play with a guy, Francie Bell. He played full back with us. And I remember we were playing in a championship match. He hadn't trained for about 6-7 weeks. I was suspended for the game, and I suppose he was our most experienced player. He played in the middle of the field, and he was just absolutely everywhere. And it was just pure will. No, he couldn't walk for a couple of weeks after, but you know, it's just pure will that was getting him around the pitch, and it even felt yesterday when you talk about Lee Keegan, like I felt over the last number of games, Lee Keegan just the energy just wasn't at the same level. Whereas the other day he was the one that was driving it on all the time. So Mike, it was obviously, you know, a brilliant weekend of football, topped off by, you know, Offaly and Roscommon in the All Ireland final. And look, it's a game that could have went either way, but it was Offaly's, and like, you know, what a win and excitement. 24,000 people in under 20 final. I mean, phenomenal.
Phenomenal, yeah. And the football matched the atmosphere that was there, and matched what happened, you know, the previous day in Croke Park. It was brilliant. I think under 20 football is some of the best football that we're seeing at the moment, because it's played in that nearly that Mayo style of reckless abandon, and fellas just go at it and play. And they're, you know, like, obviously the quality of football was really, really good. And, you know, some of the scores, some of the play, some of the pace was just brilliant to watch. But like, I'm loving what's happening in Offaly at the moment. And I think it's such, you know, it's such a template for counties like Offaly around the place, in that middle tier, who maybe don't see who don't see how to get to the next level. You look at the things that the energy that Michael Deignan has brought to that at grassroots level. You know, I read something this morning where they're looking to have 6 more coaching officers in schools in, you know, within the next 2 months, and they're looking to have another 3 or 4 by January next year. So they're like, and Shane Lowry coming on board. He's wearing a jersey yesterday. Jumping around the place, the cameras are going to him all the time. He's putting his money where his mouth is, and he's back in his county. And you can just feel the energy, you know, the positivity in football and Gaelic games in general, in Offaly, and with what John Mahan did and got him promoted, and now you can supplement that senior squad with some of the players and some of the young exciting forwards that they're producing in this group. And I just think it's. Like, Offaly should be used as a template for every other county that's in that mid-level, that's below your Dublins and your Kerrys and your Mayos and Tyrones or whoever else. This is how you can do it there, and to get the very, very most out of them.
So when you talk about template, just Mike, sorry, before you go, when you talk about template, so just basically a bit of enthusiasm, a few quid, a golfing personality.
No. Like, you're talking about how can we infiltrate the schools?
Get the,
like,
best.
How can we get a bit of positivity, a bit of energy working in schools? Like, can we get more coaches in schools? Can we improve the quality of what's being done at ground level in clubs and in schools, development squads, into your minor, into your under 20s, into your senior? Yeah, the money and the celebrity of Shane Lowry obviously helps. But it's coming from leadership. Like, it's coming from Michael Deignan, because he's saying all the right things, he's doing all the right stuff, he's bringing the right people on board, and it's just it's the way you have to do it. It's the way you bring a bit of energy to a program like that, and hopefully they'll be doing well for years to come.
But doesn't that buzz sort of reverberate around everybody? I mean, the hurlers, like, it's not a coincidence the hurlers are going wild on the 20s after winning the All Ireland promotion for the seniors. Like, it just has that unbelievable knock-on effect. Whereas over the last number of years, you would feel as if, does anybody really care about what's happening in Offaly?
But that's it. Like, all the talk is negative, that the players just won't bother. Like, but as you said, when Deignan comes in, does a few good things right in the background, puts a few structures in place, and next thing, there's a feel-good factor to it, and you know, everything is a knock-on effect to everything. Like, but you know, like in fairness, that under 20 team from Offaly, like they tried to play the game the right way. Like, I mean, there were some very good footballers there, and like I only seen the game against Dublin, like, but you know, they dominated that game, like, but they were just so, you know, as Mike said, there was just nearly a reckless abandon. They just went out to play. Like, there was no tactics or many sweepers. We'll just go and play the game and try and win it.
With the proper structures, because I sort of made this point last night where I felt as if six or seven of them looked physically developed enough to go into a senior squad, at least, maybe not, you know, start immediately. You know, how many do you think of those Offaly boys are fit to go in? Or should they just be incorporating all of those guys into some sort of, to play some sort of part, whether if they, you know, if they've gone out of under 20s to get into that senior panel? Because at the end of the day, what they are now is they're winners, and nobody can take that away from them.
Yeah, well, I don't think you can ever have a case where you bring in 15 under 20s straight away. Like, it's not, some lads will be able for it, some lads won't. But yeah, I think you have to bring in 7, 8, 9 of them at least, particularly lads who are out of under 20 and have nothing else then, you know, to look forward to. But I think, I know it's what we do in Mayo here is like, or Conor Finn, the S&C coach with the seniors, would look after the under 20s as well. I think he could have been with the minors about a few years ago. And then there's a kind of little bit of a development squad of 10 players outside of that. So they're all getting exposed to the same type of conditioning work, the same type of gym work, whatever it is. So that when they're, so they have that for 2 or 3 or 4 years. Do you know what I mean? So they're not going from one different coach, another different coach, another different coach, just changing. They've constantly got the same thing. And I think you can see that with the likes of the way Oisín, Mullen, Tommy Conroy, even in the Hesketh model, you can see how they've developed over the last 12, 18 months. It's been huge. Like, but that's because they're constantly working with the same guys and getting the same work throughout.
Yeah, brilliant. And a brilliant weekend of GAA, topped off, you know, with the ladies, which was brilliant as well. So that's us, Keith. Thanks for joining us. Mike, thanks for joining us. Paul, thanks for sort of abandoning us. Thanks to Larry, Ryan and Raf for facilitating, and to Renault for sponsoring. Thank you.
With Renault, passion for what drives you. Official car partner of the GAA.
A grain, all right. Going to tip the scale. Just remember that,
lad. There's a small bit of a needle there.
Come on, Mayo, you've got to get Andy Moran into the game.
Listen back to Eden.